Support for WILL comes from Busey. With more than 145 years of experience, Busey understands the benefits healthy businesses provide the local economy. Proudly partnering with the business community since 1868. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of November 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll preview tomorrow's USDA World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate and Crop Production Report that will be released at 11 a.m. Central Time. That with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll also take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County and discuss the weather forecast, too. We'll be joined by Mark Russo at Risk Pulse. He's in Chicago, Illinois. As we make our way through this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, and don't forget that time's now running short to get your tickets for our Farm Assets Conference. The number to call, 800-898-1065, or online at willag.org. The tickets are just $30.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, no numbers for you from the CME Group this afternoon, as I'm actually not in the studio, but lecturing at this hour to a class here at the University of Illinois about the history of agriculture and how it has managed to feed the world's population. Remember, in year one, about 200 million folks on the planet. In this year, 2015, 7 billion. And the number of farmers has dropped dramatically. Half the population in the United States in the 1930s still farmed. Today, there are, 320 to 340 million people in the U.S. And commercial farmers that feed the bulk of us, creating about 90-95% of all the food and feedstuffs, number only 140 to 180,000. That's by the USDA Census of Agriculture numbers. So we'll be talking about that with the class here on campus. No worries. I've got some really great stuff for you, all pre-recorded in the last couple of hours. So you'll want to stay put and listen up. Great conversation with Amy Sage at the Andersons. And I talked, of course, with Kurt Kimmel. We'll hear that in just a bit. And we took a quick look at the weather forecast, too. That with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse. A fantastic conversation with him. You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you can purchase your tickets for our Farm Assets Conference or 800-898-1065.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
On the subject of the Farm Assets Conference, have you picked up your tickets yet for this event? Again, if not, please do visit our website at farmassetsconference.com. We'll take up big data, management of the farm, the value of farmland, runoff and regulation, and we'll talk about commodity prices. Should be an absolutely fantastic event. You can get your tickets right now, 800-898-1065 or farmassetsconference.com. They're just $30 for this Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving event in Normal, Illinois. It's at a great venue, the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, and it should be a fantastic day. Our doors open at 9:30. We'll have a discussion for a good portion of the day. The analysts that will be on hand are a who's who list of who you hear on our own station, including a couple of really cool folks that will be coming in. Jerry Golke will be there, and so will be Sue Martin. So please do visit our website, pick up those tickets right now. Don't wait any longer, because that's getting that time that you really need to buy your tickets and get your space saved for the Farm Assets Conference on the 24th day of this month. Now, here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We'll see sunny skies and a high of 57 degrees tonight, clear and a low of 34. Tomorrow, 58 degrees, calm winds out of southwest at 5 to 7. And Tuesday evening, mostly clear with a low of 43 degrees. For Veterans Day, Wednesday showers, thunderstorms in the afternoon, increasing clouds, a high of 63 degrees, 60% chance of precipitation in the Urbana-Champaign area.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Remember, the markets were still open when Kurt Kimmel and I had this conversation, because I'm lecturing at this point in the afternoon to a class here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. And my thanks go, of course, to Kurt for joining us early. Kurt, thanks so much for being here. Tell me about the market as you saw it trade through just about the 1 o'clock hour today.
Well, we saw the market try to bounce in the early morning trade, and as we got to the so-called day session, kind of gave up gain. A lot of spread activity, buying beans, selling corn, buying beans, selling wheat on the spread. And as we go into the close, wheat, you know, the big one down over 20, corn down 5, and the beans has gone into negative territory. I think a lot of it's the concern or hedging up ahead of the monthly supply-demand report. Ideas are we could probably see numbers just be a little bit bigger. But, you know, as a whole, we're looking at some numbers that are virtually kind of unchanged. You know, to shift bean ending stocks by 5 to 10 million, yeah, that's a lot if you're individual. But as a whole, you know, you need to see a little bit more of that in the corn stocks in the upper 1.5 billion bushel area. What the report's going to really show, I think, is that we have ample supplies of grain around here in the U.S. and ample supplies worldwide. And what the trade probably eagerly watching more than anything to see if they adjust the overall demand numbers and see how that bottom line equates from that type of change versus, you know, the yield.
If we get confirmation from the United States Department of Agriculture that the trade estimates are fairly close to on target, does the trade then change recent direction and go more sideways to higher after this, after getting some confirmation that, yes, indeed, the size of the corn crop, yes, indeed, the size of the soybean crop is as we thought it was?
Well, I think we stabilize. I think we're kind of sideways to higher end through here. Now, when I say higher, that doesn't mean we're going to go, you know, sharply higher. But I kind of feel the confirmation of the numbers will indicate we've got quite a bit of grain for sale above the market. But yet, too, the end user is going to use breaks in here to get some coverage on. So I think it's more of a grind sideways type of trade here as we go through the winter. The thing we're kind of faced with is that we've got the world's largest speculator caught long in the market right now. And what I mean by that is the farmer. He's pretty well got his inventory in the bin or in the elevator. And so I think the trade's got wind of this, and they know that. And it's going to be quite a challenge here to kind of fight that off, because there's going to be a lot of grain for sale above the market here as we go into 2016.
So what generally would happen when you have an entity, and let's call the farmers as a whole a single entity, on one side of the marketplace and they're caught, is that as much damage as possible is can sometimes be the end result. And what the others in the marketplace try to do, and essentially they're trying to make as much profit as they possibly can from a position that they know is, at least at that point, not on the right side of the market. Is there enough push to the downside to really make this hurt for producers, at least on the futures markets? And I suspect that on the cash side that things would be moving in an opposite direction.
Yeah, it's not like we're going to see hedge fund force their hand and see massive liquidation. You know, by all means, I think it's just going to, you know, limit the upside potential. You know, the buyers have been active pre-harvest, during harvest, and still active right now trying to secure inventory. Now, harvest is going to be fairly well wrapped up on this afternoon's crop progress report here in the Eastern Belt particularly. So, you know, if the end user needs some more, they're going to try to continue to purchase some more, but they'll get to a point where they'll take some downtime and kind of weigh things out, because they know producer is going to need some cash flow after the first of the year here to pay for inputs. And so they're going to be patient in through here and try to hold out on their purchasing until after the first of the year and see if this farmer selling picks up here as they turn cash grain into cash dollars.
Have you started to devise differing strategies for those in the areas that do have corn and those that don't, so the eastern corn belt and the western corn belt, and I'm thinking mostly from eastern Illinois to the east and then to the other direction west? And if so, how should producers think differently about the marketplace if they need to at all?
Well, that varies a lot just for guys in the same location, you know, according to their own specific situation. And what I mean by that is cash flow needs and also two type of storage situations, whether it's on-farm or commercial storage. Here in the east, there's been some fairly good pent-up demand and decent basis. And here in the east, we've seen a lot of guys come in and move the cash, take advantage of the strong basis, and replace ownership on paper. As far as the western belt goes, did a little bit more hedge activity there. Sold the July, sold a little bit of carry in the marketplace and on farm storage, and just didn't want to part with it because, you know, basically once you get past the end of October to November here, you kind of lose your so-called put option through crop revenue. You know, if you go down that route, it's some risk management practices. So, you know, this really depends where you're at. The function of the market's going to be to move the grain from the western belt to the eastern belt here according to this spring. The main thing to keep in mind, though, is working capital. And at these lower levels in through here, we feel that you need to generate some revenue to have ample working capital, but yet have some re-ownership on paper in the event that we see some type of weather event in the southern hemisphere or here in the U.S. next spring, because when you look at, say, 350 corn and 850 beans, that historically is at the lower end of the range.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us. I'm looking forward, by the way, to having your compadre, Pete Manhart, on the Farm Assets Conference with us at the end of this month.
Yeah, I think he's kind of excited about it, too. It's a good event to be at, and unfortunately I'm not going to be there, so I'll have to hear the tape delay on that one.
Hey, thanks, Kurt. Kurt Kimmel, of course, is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. You can buy your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference right now if you'd like at 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Or online, willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. That's the second website. You can find all the details about the Farm Assets Conference. It's the 24th day of November in Normal, Illinois, at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. In today's agricultural news, the release of the Trans-Pacific Partnership text sets a chain of events in motion for congressional approval and signing by member nations. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says everyone now has a chance to look at it.
Opportunity for folks to look at it, at least 90 days, and after that, Congress is then free to act to either approve or not the TPP. And I sincerely hope that Congress ultimately makes the right decision and supports this.
With both China and the EU working on their own deals, Vilsack is optimistic for prompt action.
It's important, I think, to get this done before the elections. Obviously, Congress has got to take the time to research this and to think about it. But, you know, if you wait until after the elections, boy, Congress's record of getting things done in lame duck sessions is not particularly good.
Secretary Vilsack believes the TPP is good for American agriculture. President Obama agrees with him and has signaled his intent to sign the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. The signal came as Senate Finance Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch said Obama has to prove to Congress it should approve the measure. Obama wrote to congressional leaders last week claiming the TPP agreement will generate export opportunities for U.S. manufacturers, service suppliers, farmers, ranchers, and businesses, help create jobs in the United States, and help American consumers save money while offering them more choices. Senator Hatch said, though, that the president's intent to sign the deal does not mean its duty is over to convince Congress that this TPP is the best agreement possible. Further, Hatch said only Congress can enact the trade agreement, and for that to happen, the agreement must meet the requirements laid out in bipartisan trade promotion authority. For its part, the Grains Council issued a joint statement along with the National Corn Growers Association pledging support for the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. NCGA President Chip Boling says this agreement will give American farmers and ranchers greater access to the Asia-Pacific region, bringing more American grains, meats, and dairy to the rest of the world. Well, the American Farm Bureau Federation will stay in Washington, D.C., and a coalition of agricultural and builder groups Friday, asked the United States Supreme Court to review a lower court ruling that allows the EPA to micromanage local land use and development decisions under the guise of the implementation of the Federal Clean Water Act. The lower court's rulings, according to the petition, opens the door for a dramatic expansion of federal power. And EPA should not be able to do this, says the Farm Bureau. The lawsuit arose in the context of EPA's so-called blueprint for restoring the Chesapeake Bay, but Farm Bureau points out that the issue at stake is national in scope. 21 states, 39 members of Congress, and a group of counties within the Bay watershed supported AFBF's legal challenge in the lower courts. And finally today, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Syngenta is discussing with DuPont a potential combination with DuPont's agriculture division. However, sources said the discussions are at an early stage and may result in no deal. The talks, though, have clearly gathered steam since Monsanto in August abandoned its effort to acquire Syngenta for as much as $46 billion after being turned away by the Swiss company. That deal would have created the world's largest supplier of seeds and pesticides, but Monsanto now could face the threat of much larger competitors if its rivals end up combining and it strikes no combination of its own. The CEO of Dow Chemical on a conference call last month said, "Everyone is talking to everyone." The merger talks come as farm income hits its lowest level in nearly a decade. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. It's the ninth day of November. Amy Sage is here from the Andersons to take up the cash grain market. Amy, thanks so much. I suspect, given the weather, that maybe you may have a few trucks and farmers trying to get things done, but that may not be the case. Anybody moving into the elevator at this point?
I think we are officially completely wrapped up. Last week, we saw the last bit of corn come in and the last of the double crop beans, so really not a lot of inbound truck traffic. I think most of the guys are just working ground and getting fall fertilizer applied at this point. So ahead of Wednesday's forecast, that should be good.
Yeah, speaking of the fall fertilizer, some of you should probably go check out the Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy Plan. Just Google that for the state of Illinois. See what it says. There are three easy things that the Illinois Fertilizer Chemical Association really wants you to do. That's the industry rep. And they put posters in a lot of the chemical dealer reps and office spaces across the state of Illinois, especially as it relates to anhydrous. We're good at this point because no anhydrous before or after, before November 1st is one of the primary items. Okay, so now let's come back to the cash grain market. Bin doors are closed. Amy, will they open back up anytime soon?
I don't think so, especially with prices being how they are at this point. I think it's going to be this winter before we see any type of movement. We actually are just starting to get our ground pile picked up today. That'll take about 40 days, and I would say we'll probably have that picked up before we see any inbound grain from the farm at this point.
Does that ground pile go onto trains, and is it loaded out and just go away, or you transition from what's in storage and then move the ground pile inside and then transition again to the trains?
A little bit of both, actually. We've been fortunate with getting some rail movement here, and have had trains showing up pretty frequently. Rail values have been strong, as we've seen reflected in cash basis levels since the tail end of harvest there. So we'll load directly what we can, especially this year since corn came in so dry. We're not having to run it through dryers again, coming off of the ground. So some of that will go directly onto rail.
Rail going anyplace new this year based on the lack of availability in the eastern Corn Belt?
No new markets for us here, but a lot is moving to the southeast, since that's where the shortage is. It's to the eastern Corn Belt.
And that would be primarily where you ship to from the Andersons, is that
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely,
right.
Yep.
So you're shipping into both, I think, the poultry and the hog facilities in the Carolinas and a couple of other places.
That's right, that's right. Just a little more aggressive markets this year.
And values have been very strong there, and you expect them to stay that way for the whole of the winter months?
I do. I guess what we're kind of looking at here is as people get their needs met from a processor and from a end user standpoint, we might see it plateau. But like we just did at the tail end of harvest there, for example, we improved our corn bid by 15 cents in about 10 days, and then it stayed flat now for the past week or 10 days here since that point. But it's definitely not softening up today. So the only cautionary tail, I guess, is that there is corn in the west. So at some point, if logistics jive, then that problem could resolve itself. But at this point, basis has stayed firm, and we'd have to see some needs really getting met and some corn starting to move from the west to the east in order for that to start to drop.
And how easy would that be to have happen? It seems logistically that that's a, you know, that's another 500 miles. It seems logistically that might be a pretty good distance to add on to a trip for the trains.
It is, and ironically, it's actually been cheaper freight-wise to ship corn to the southeast from South America and from Canada than it has been from Iowa and Nebraska. So there's some really odd variability in freight values at this point, given the crop size. And so it'll be a task to get that resolved. At some point it will, but it's not going to happen overnight.
Soy complex, soybeans, what do we have happening in the cash markets there?
A little less exciting, actually. Basis has firmed up a little bit here in the past week or so, but not to the same extent as what the corn market has. I think just across the Midwest, we had much better than expected yields in beans, whereas the corn crop was a little more variable from the west to the east. So soybean cash market has been firming up a little bit, but nothing to write home about.
Amy, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
As Amy said, she's with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Got your tickets, farmassetsconference.com, 800-898-1065. 800-898-1065. Don't wait any longer. We're really at that time where you need to pick up those tickets right now. Again, farmassetsconference.com or 800-898-1065. When we come back, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Scrapple Day. Scrapple is traditionally a mush of pork scraps, cornmeal, and flour, and is arguably the first pork food invented in America. On this day in agricultural history in 1801, American manufacturer Gale Borden was born. He invented a commercial method for condensing milk by heating it in a vacuum. He also created a meat biscuit of cooked meat extracts and flour that was capable of long-term storage. He was the founder of the New York Condensed Milk Company, which in 1968 became Borden. In 1891, George Hormel opened his meat packing house in Austin, Minnesota. To make ends meet in those early days, Hormel continued to trade in hides, eggs, wool, and poultry. In 1911, George Claude applied for a patent for an electric neon sign. In 1938, Edward Murray East died, an American botanist and chemist. He contributed to genetic theory and to the development of hybrid corn by applying inbred strain breeding, what was then a revolutionary method of seed production. Specifically, he concentrated on controlling the protein and fat content of possible hybrids. East also studied the genetics and breeding of tobacco and potatoes. And in 1965, at 5:15 p.m., a 13-hour blackout of the northeastern U.S. and parts of Canada began when the electric grid failed. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's the 9th day of November, Monday afternoon. Have you gotten your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference yet? 9th day of November, not until the 24th do you have to be there, but you have to have a ticket. So why don't you walk on over to the website, farmassetsconference.com, or call this number, 800-898-1065 for me. That's 800-898-1065 right now if you want to pick up your ticket. It's just $30. This event is so well put together, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of patting myself on the back here, but we happen to get lucky, and sometimes I'd rather be lucky than good, and get the right things up front. So what are the things we're talking about? Markets, of course. We always do that. Big data. You know, Congress had a hearing last week on this. John Deere and Monsanto got together on this last week. Actually, Monsanto will be making a presentation on big data. It'll be John Jansen, who's a VP there, of their Climate Corp group, Climate Ag Services. And we're also talking about nutrient loss. Of course, we have lawsuits in Iowa. We've had some problems in Massachusetts. The state of Illinois trying to bring it head-to-head in terms of how do producers put themselves in a position not to be regulated. Let me repeat that, not to be regulated. All at the Farm Assets Conference. It's just $30. It's the 24th day of November in Normal, Illinois. Get your tickets right now, 800-898-1065. I kid you not, this is going to be a good one. And you can get the tickets online at farmassetsconference.com. On the line, speaking of that, from Risk Pulse is Mark Russo to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. There are some turbulent days, I think, in the Midwest this week, maybe Wednesday and possibly Thursday. Is that right?
Yeah, that's certainly the case here, Todd. We do see a storm system that will be ejecting out from the Rockies into the plains here tomorrow, and that will influence our weather here in Illinois, let alone the whole Midwest, coming up Wednesday night into Thursday. With that, will actually come a risk of severe thunderstorms, which I guess isn't that uncommon for this time of year. The fall, especially late October and early November, can be a time of year where we do have an enhanced risk of severe weather, kind of the second severe weather season, as we have that clash of air masses, higher frequency of that at this time. And so that is something to keep in mind as we go through the day on Wednesday and then on into Thursday. But once that system goes through, we do see some continued breezy conditions into Thursday, but that looks to be our primary just window of rain and storminess here this week, again, just centered on the middle part of this week.
And a short update on South America.
Well, for South America, there continue to be no major issues at the present time. There is going to be a break in rain activity across Mato Grosso and some of your adjacent areas there in center west Brazil. However, that looks short-lived as rain activity does look to increase across the region as we go through next week, and that will continue to improve soil moisture. The one item of note that could be net detrimental is this wetter than normal pattern across southern and southeastern Brazil that may delay planting progress. Again, doesn't look excessive or enough to cause excessive wetness issues, but that is really the only detrimental item in the pattern here, is this wetter than normal pattern that looks to prevail across southern Brazil over the next few weeks.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo, of course, is with Risk Pulse. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. That wraps up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.